I am so excited about the spirituality in AA, and we heard alcoholism looked at from the medical model. And I'll tell you what it looks like to me with the spiritual model, which is an entirely different starting point. And I'll tell you the starting point that I'd like to use. Last week I was in Rapid City, South Dakota, at an AA roundup, and there was that's where the Mount Rushmore is. And also, it's where Crazy Horse Mountain is. And Crazy Horse was one of the top spiritual people in the Lakota tribe. And about 25 years ago, the elders wanted to find a sculptor who could carve this holy mountain and put Crazy Horse up there. And they found a Polish sculptor from the East Coast, invited him out, and talked to him. And he agreed to do it, which is a lifelong commitment. And he started out in a tent at the bottom, and he would climb up to 700 feet with primitive tools, a star drill and a striking hammer, and drill the holes for the dynamite. And then boom. And eventually he built a log cabin, eventually he built stairway up there, eventually he got a compressor. And he worked all by himself for years. Then he built a log cabin, he got married, they had 10 kids. And he died, and 8 of the kids and his wife are still carrying it on. They turned down an offer from the government of $5 million because they don't want government control. And they've got a big viewing area and a lot of Indian history and Indian relics, and they have a movie, and this is what I'm on to talk about. And the movie is narrated by one of the elders of that tribe. And when he came on and started talking, I knew him. And his name was Billy Mills. And Billy Mills, in 1964, was a Marine Corps second lieutenant who won the 10,000 meters in the Tokyo Olympics, and nobody thought he could do it. And he beat his own personal best by like 30 seconds. So I remember his name. Now he's an elder and gave this talk. And this is what he said to put it in the frame of reference. Twice he said it in the talk. He said, "We believe that we are spiritual beings having a human experience." That's what he said they believe. We are spiritual being having a human experience. Now, I hear that in AA quite a bit, that that's a wonderful way to start to frame the discussion of spirituality, that everyone is a spiritual being having a human experience. And so, what is the problem? Why aren't we aware that we're spiritual beings having a human experience? Because as we started having this experience, we also have a mind that's capable of thinking up and commenting on the human experience that we're having. And as we're having it, we're making up a story about it, just like I made up a story about how those guys felt about me in that squadron. And as the years go on, the story becomes the reality, and the conscious awareness of how we started is gone. It's that simple. And so if, as Chuck Chamberlain said, the only problem that we have is conscious separation, there are no other problems when you look at it from a spiritual point. We think we're separate. And as our consciousness thinks about things, we see ourselves as a separate person, alone in the universe, with all these other people, and it scares the hell out of us. It's lonely being just yourself. And so Chuck said, that's our only problem. In our consciousness, we think we're separate. Well, what does AA have for us? Conscious contact. So it's as if, through our storytelling, we created a dream world that we think is real. And the answer to a dream is simple. You wake up, and then it's gone. And then you go, oh, it was just a dream. Just like I woke up. Oh, it was just me thinking they hated me. They really loved me. Imagine that. And that's why when we look at our program, there's only one result that we're supposed to get. And it's right in the 12th step. Having had an awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics. What message? How to awaken. You see what I'm saying? How to awaken. So when, for example, the language of spirituality is just the opposite of everything we're familiar with. And you all know the first paradox that we run into. Okay, if you want to win, you have to give up. You have to surrender. You have put up the white flag and you are the winner. But where did that ever come in? It's just revolutionary, the transformation you have to make in order to think in spiritual terms. I'm still in the Marine Corps and they tell me pride's a character defect. I'm going, what? Have you heard of the few, the proud? What? Pride is a character defect? Is this a communist organization? Are you trying to undermine the safety of the United States? Telling us that pride is a character defect? What are you talking about? Turns out, in the spiritual world, it's probably the top character defect that you can have. And the opposite is humility. Now, if you're not going to use a higher power, pride is a great motivator. But we're not living in that world. We're living in this world. The heart of every problem is seeing the situation incorrectly. And that's the purpose of a sponsor or a spiritual advisor. Someone comes to me with a problem and I go, well, actually, you're looking at it wrong. Let's look at it from a different perspective. This happened with my sponsor early on. I was running in. You know how we run in when we're new. Oh, the sky's falling again. It's really falling. I just saw pieces coming down. And then he would sit me down and go, yes, okay, well, maybe the sky's falling. But on the other hand, there's this and that. You got the new friends. You got 6 months now. People like you. And then I'd get all through and I'd go, well, if you look at it that way, it's not so bad. He didn't solve my problem. He showed me how to look at things differently so there wasn't a problem. So you can see, again, the heart of everything is seeing it wrong. Where do we see that in our literature? Our problems, we think, are of our own making. We make them. I was amazed to find out that if I imagine that someone in the back of the room doesn't like me, then I tell myself he doesn't like me. Emotionally, I feel terrible because I'm sitting in a room with a guy that can't stand me. There he is back there, just glaring at me. I feel as bad as if he came up and said, I don't like you. The first one, I made up. I just had a thought that he doesn't like me. Then I reacted to it, and then it became the truth. And they said, what's your problem? He doesn't like me. Did you ask him? No. Well, how do you know he doesn't like me? I can feel it. I can feel it. Did anybody ever do that? I can feel it. And then you go talk to him, just like I felt shame. And then I went and talked to the people and said, oh, no, we all love you. Oh, wrong. Just I'm wrong. I remember the first time my sponsor finally goes, look, Sandy, you're wrong. Let me explain it. And he went through the whole thing, and finally I went, okay, all right, you're right. He said, no, you're wrong. I said, well, that's the same thing. Well, let me hear you say it. Let me hear you say it. I don't know about you, but saying I'm wrong is stuck in my throat. I'm wrong. I can't hear you. Okay. And finally I went, okay, I'm wrong. I felt wonderful. The greatest relief to admit that you're wrong. We have a whole step designed for that. 10th step. When you're wrong. Woo! Doesn't say if you're wrong. When you're wrong. What could I be wrong about? How about everything? What if every idea you have about the world is wrong? What if you did right now? What if you forgave every person or every incident that was unfair to you in your entire life? I don't think there'd be much left to carry around. You forgave every unfair incident or every time a person was unfair, and you forgave them. What would you have to think about? Man, I'd be the hole in the donut. Remember that in the 12 and 12? I'd be nobody. I am the guy that thinks about all this stuff. And so I have created a place to live that is quite painful, unsatisfactory, and no matter what I do, I never get happy. Because in the church world, or even in the science world, they're experts on the past and the future, but there's no consideration of the present moment, which is the only place that God is. He's in this moment. He exists in the now. So in order to be with God, I have to be in this moment. So where is this moment? See, this is the thing about spirituality. It's just constantly filled with this backward stuff. There's no straight answer. All spiritual growth is done by getting rid of things. You don't get anything. You follow what I'm saying? We get rid of old ideas. Okay, get rid of that, get rid of that. And what's left is the truth, which is already inside of us. It's there, but then we made up a big story that contradicts it all. So as we dismantle through inventory process, and we see, oh, I was wrong about that. Okay, I'll forgive him. Okay. I'm slowly getting rid of everything that isn't the real me. So if the search is really for the true self, you get there by getting rid of everything that isn't it. And to get to the now, I get rid of everything that isn't the now. Every resentment about the past and every fear about the future. And again, fear is the product of this illusion. I wanted to read out of page 30 because it describes it so well, what I, the point I'm trying to make. I have to take my glasses off to read. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinking. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. So we have an illusion that we pursue into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. So what do we do with old ideas? Smash them. You follow what I'm saying? Smash them. I've got to get rid of the delusion, the illusion that I can drink like other people. And as that is smashed, I'm no longer tormented by it. And so you can see that Chuck used to say, my hero is Chuck Chamberlain, uncover, discover, discard. What else am I wrong about? And wouldn't it be wonderful to be wrong about 10 things today and get rid of all 10? He saw this freedom was throwing away everything that was wrong. Every idea that I had that wasn't true. So how am I going to find that? Through our inventory process. And what do we learn out of our inventory process? We can't see the truth alone. That's why we go to our sponsor with the fifth step. And here's our fifth step, and one of the things we have is rationalization, distortion of reality. So the question is, how do we know anything on here is right? You don't, but you will after you run it by your sponsor. He'll bring out the third dimension in every one of the things we've written down. That's not as bad as you think it is. This is much more serious. Look at it this way. Look at it that way. When he gets through running it through a second pair of eyes, it's like 3D movies. You need two cameras. And then you see a dimension that was never there before. You're seeing the reality and the real truth of your own life. So there we learn right off the bat the value of running everything by someone else, which is just the opposite of pride. Well, maybe you have to run it by. I don't. I'm cool. I figure it all out myself. I'm a self-made man. All of those things that are killers in terms of staying sober and happy. And so we value greatly running everything by someone else. It's absolutely counterintuitive. And one of the things that happens with spirituality is that it works. That's one of the problems. I said success. That's one of the problems with spirituality. It works. And you get your family back. And you get your self-respect back. And one day the ego says a prayer. You didn't know egos prayed. Well, if it did pray, this is what it would say. It would get down on our knees and we go, God, I want to thank you. You took this lowly mess. You restored him to his place in society, a place in his family. He has his own respect back. His brain is back. And I realize that I owe it all to you. You have taken this mess and returned it to a place where I no longer need you. That's the death rattle right there. You have returned me to a position of self-sufficiency. Might as well start packing it in because things are going to get really bad in a short while as we become self-sufficient inadvertently. The sense of success gives that feeling, I have the power back, instead of the pure gratitude for being held here in the hands of our higher power. And so I would say that the spiritual model of this disease hangs on the word awakening, that the answer to every problem is to see that it's not there. And that requires an abandoning, as Bill likes to use it, of our point of view, of our judgment, relying on judgments. If we're going to turn our life over, we can't have any goals, can't have any causes, can't have any opinions, can't have any judgments. We either turn it over or we don't. In other words, the goal of spirituality is not to get some higher power to help you with your goal. It's to ask him what he would like you to do. So I would submit that when I was little, I was told the wrong things about how to live as a man. I was told that it's my life, nobody else is going to live it for me, and that I better make something out of me. And if you're going to make something out of you, you better go to school, you better study hard, you better go get high grades and then get a job. And then if you persist, you will be successful and you finally make something out of you. And many times people at age 55 have $1 million and are thinking of suicide at the same time because they're still alone, they're still afraid, and they haven't figured out anything. And perhaps the instruction should have been, it's not your life. It's not your life at all. It's God's. You just get out of the way and let him make something out of you. And then you'll be able to find happiness. And you will be molded into what you were intended to be. And so we go from self-centered objectives into a process of guidance. And we all are familiar with guidance, air traffic control. There they are, blah, blah, blah. Take this heading, you won't hit the mountain. Are you sure? Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And we just go, good, I'm glad that guy's guiding me. And we take us right through danger on both sides. Full trust in whoever's talking to us or whoever designed the equipment. Full trust put our lives on the line with an electronic box. And yet when it comes to trusting God, I don't think so. I think I better keep a little control to myself. And this is the sixth step of our program, and I'll wrap it up with this. The sixth step really deals with perfection. We're entirely willing to have God remove all our defects. And when Bill wrote the 12 and 12, somebody asked him about the four absolutes of the Oxford group, which Akron, or Cleveland still prints them in the inner group. Absolute love, unselfishness, honesty, purity. And he said, no, I think for new alcoholics that just setting those standards up there, absolute, would just be too high, be too hard on them. So in the big book, we have progress, not perfection. Everybody quotes it all the time. But once you get through reading the 12 and 12 in the sixth step, you suddenly realize that it's progress towards perfection. And therein lies the dilemma. Well, if it's progress towards perfection, why haven't we gotten rid of all our character defects? We got rid of our drinking, but the rest of them are still hanging around to some degree or another. And a lot of times the six-step prayer will be misinterpreted to say, well, God didn't get rid of that because it's not standing in the way of my being useful. You know how it says, remove everything that's blocking me from being useful? I think that's just rationalization. God would be happy to remove anything that you would let go of. The resistance is not in the perfect help that's available. The resistance is in, I don't want perfect help. I'd like to get rid of most of lust, but not all of it. What would that be? I'd like to stop all this gossiping. It's a terrible thing. It ruins people's reputations. We got to stop gossiping. And I go, that's right. We got to stop. I'm stopping as of now. Well, I'm going to stop originating gossip. However, if someone starts it here and simply wants it relayed over there, I could serve as a telephone wire allowing. Why? Because it makes me feel good. And so as we go through all of the pride, greed, envy, lust, etc., we find that we want to settle for as much perfection as will get us by. And that is the dilemma of spirituality. Is year by year to try and find what else we can let go of. And as we let go of it, we see fewer problems. Fewer and fewer. Things that used to infuriate you are gone. Families, members that used to bug the hell out of you have turned into nice people. And so through a process of getting rid of old ideas, we live in a very happy world. And so, sorry for the lecture, but that's what was on my mind tonight. Thank you all very much.